Sitting in Mrs. Tilsit's tiny front room, Robert again considered the surroundings and wondered why Betty Kane had found them so good. Had she found a friend? A girl next door? A boy next door? At least he thought this woman explained one of the oddities in the affair. The fact that when the Wynns had written to have Betty sent home at once, her aunt hadn't flown to a telegraph office to break the news that Betty had left for home nearly a fortnight before. The Betty who had gone a fortnight previously would be much less real in Mrs. Tilsit's mind than the jelly cooling on the back window sill. "I wasn't worried about her," Mrs. Tilsit said, as if to echo his thoughts. "I knew she would turn up. When Mr. Tilsit came home, he was quite upset about it. He goes away for a week or 10 days at a time. He's agent for Weeks's. Carried on like a mad thing, he did. But I just said, 'You wait and she'll turn up all right.' And she did. Well, nearly all right. She said she enjoyed her holiday here enormously. I suppose she did. Did she make friends? Oh, no. She was in Labra most of the time.
Labra? How did she spend her time there?
Pictures mostly and bus riding.
Bus riding? Where?
Anywhere the fancy took her. She went to see the castle at Norton one day.
Did she not come home to lunch?
No. She'd have a snack somewhere. We always have a meal at night, you see, with Mr. Tilsit being out all day, so there was always a meal waiting when she came home.
And what time would that be? 6?
No, Mr. Tilsit doesn't usually manage home before 7:30.
And Betty was home long before then?
Mostly she was. She was late once, but Mr. Tilsit created about it, and after that she was always home before him. When he was here, that is, she wasn't so careful when he was away.
So the girl had been her own mistress for a fortnight, free to come and go without question. It was an innocent-sounding fortnight, and in the case of most girls of her age, it undoubtedly would have been. The cinema, or window-gazing, a snack lunch, a bus ride into the country. But Betty Kane was no normal adolescent. She was the girl who had told that long and circumstantial story to the police. The girl with 4 weeks of her life unaccounted for. The girl that someone had ended by beating unmercifully.
"Did she go to Milford on the bus? Do you know?" Robert asked. "They asked me that, but I couldn't say yes or no."
"They?"
"The police?"
"Oh, of course. Did the police know Betty was away on her own all day?"
"I can't remember. They asked me how she passed her time, and I said that mostly she went to the pictures or bus riding, and they said, did I go with her? And I said, well, I'll have to admit I told a white lie about it, and I said that I did now and then. I didn't want them to think Betty went to places alone. Though, of course, there was no harm in it."
"Did she have letters while she was here?" Robert asked, as he was taking his leave.
"Just from home. In any case, they wouldn't have written to her, would they?"
Who?
"Those women who kidnapped her." It was with a feeling of escape that Robert drove on to Labra. There he sought out the main garage of the Labra and District Bus Service, where a man in bus inspector's uniform was going through papers on a desk. Robert said he wanted to see someone who would know about the Milford bus service.
"Timetable on the wall outside," the man said without looking up. "I don't want to know about times. I want to know if you ever run a double-decker bus on that route."
"No,"
said the man.
"Never?" Robert asked.
This time there was no answer at all. The inspector made it plain he was finished with him.
"Listen," Robert said, "this is important. I am a partner in a firm of solicitors in Milford, and I..."
The man turned on him.
"I don't care if you are the Shah of Persia. There are no double-decker buses on the Milford run. And what do you want?" he asked as a small mechanic appeared.
The mechanic hesitated, as if the business he had come on had been upset by a newer interest. He pulled himself together.
"It's about the spares for Norton."
As Robert was edging past him, he felt a tug on his coat and realized the mechanic wanted him to linger. Robert went outside and waited. Presently, the mechanic appeared.
"You asking about double-decker buses? I couldn't contradict him. In the mood he's in, it'd be as much as my job's worth."
Yes, I wanted to know whether there ever are two-decker buses on the Milford route.
Well, there aren't supposed to be, but once or twice this year we've had to use a double-decker when one of the single ones broke down.
Would it be possible to find out exactly when?
Oh, certainly. But the records are in there.
He tilted his head to indicate the office.
And as long as he's there, there's nothing doing.
Robert asked at what hour there would be something doing.
He goes off at 6. I could look up the schedules when he's gone if it's important to you.
On Sunday morning, Robert's welcome at the franchise was warm.
"I'm sorry we refused to answer the telephone last night," Marion said. "But after the fourth or fifth time, it really was too much."
"Your telephone callers, were they male or female?"
"One male and 4 female, as far as I can remember. And we certainly provided the Saturday evening's entertainment for the country youths. They congregated in a group and catcalled, and then Neville found a bar of wood in the outhouse."
"Neville?"
"Yes, your nephew. I mean your cousin. He came to pay what he called a visit of condolence, which was very nice of him. And he found a bar of wood that could be wedged in the gateway to keep the thing shut. We have no key for it, you see. Of course, that didn't stop them for long. They hoisted each other up on the wall and sat there in a row being offensive until it was time for them to go to their beds."
Robert said, "We must see what police protection we can get. Meanwhile, I can tell you something pleasanter about that wall. I know how the girl saw over it. In the fortnight she was at Maneshill, there were 2 breakdowns of single-decker buses due to go out on the Milford run, and each time a double-decker bus had to be substituted. So there were at least 2 occasions when she could have seen the house, the courtyard, you two, and the car, all together."
"But could anyone passing on top of a bus take in so much?" Marion asked.
"Have you ever travelled on the upper deck of a country bus? The pace seems funereal. What you can see starts so much farther away, and you can see it for so much longer. That is one thing. The other is, the girl has a photographic memory."
"Do we tell the police?"
old Mrs. Sharp asked. "No, it doesn't prove anything. Just solves the problem of how she knew about you. So, when she needed an alibi, she remembered you, and risked your not being able to prove you were somewhere else."
"And the police inquiries didn't unearth what she was doing that month?"
"The police inquiries were devoted to checking out her statement. They had no particular reason to doubt it, and when they inquired from her aunt how she spent her holiday, they found it consisted of innocent visits to the cinema and country bus rides."
"And what do you think it consisted of?"
"I think she met someone in Larborough, and it's from that supposition any inquiry should start. I thought of beginning with the snack lunch places in Larborough. Her aunt said she usually stayed out for lunch, so I shall flourish the newspaper article at the waitresses and find out whether they have ever seen the girl." Marion left the room to fetch some sherry, and in the silence that followed, the quiet of the old house became apparent. The silence was absolute. Was it peaceful, Robert wondered, or lonely? And a little frightening.
"It seems to me," Mrs. Sharp said, "that the girl took a great risk in choosing the franchise, knowing nothing of the household or its circumstances."
"Of course," Robert replied, "but I don't think it was as big a gamble as you think. Either she gossiped with the bus conductor, or she overheard comments from her fellow passengers. You know the kind of thing. There are the Sharps. Fancy living alone in a big house like that, just the two of them, and no maids willing to stay in a lonely place so far from shops and the pictures, and so on. It is very much a local bus, the Larborough-Milford one, and the franchise is the only spot of human interest for miles."
"I see, yes, that makes sense."
"I wish, in a way, it had been through chatting with the conductor. The girl says she was never in Milford, and doesn't know where it is. If a conductor remembered her, we could at least shake her story. If I fail to pick up the girl's trail in Larborough, I'll try her picture on the local conductors." They were sitting looking out on the courtyard, and as Marion came back with the sherry, a small group of people appeared there. Entirely at their ease, they were pointing out the salient features. If last night the franchise had provided the country youth with its Saturday evening entertainment, it was now, so it would seem, providing Sunday morning interest for Larborough.
"Our public," Mrs.
Sharp said witheringly. Robert felt small and inadequate. If he went out and asked them to move on, and they refused, what power had he to make them go? He longed to do something decisive and spectacular. But while he hesitated, angry with himself, rescue arrived in the person of a young man in a regrettable tweed suit.
Neville, Marion breathed.
The young man looked at the group for a few seconds and then fished something out of his breast pocket. A strange difference came over the group, and they began to fade unobtrusively through the gate. Neville banged it to behind them, then strolled up the path, and Marion ran out to meet him.
Neville,
Robert heard her say,
how did you do it?
Neville said, you've no idea how discreet people become if you take out a notebook and ask for their names and addresses.
Hello, Robert.
Good morning, Mrs. Sharp. I'm actually on my way to Larborough, but I saw the gate open, so I stopped to investigate. I didn't know Robert was here.
The implication that Robert was capable of dealing equally well with the situation was the unkindest cut of all. Robert could have brained him.
Well, now that you are here, you must stay and drink a glass of sherry, Mrs. Sharp said.
Could I drink it on my way home this evening? Neville asked. You see, I'm on my way to my prospective father-in-law's, and the thought of talking to you tonight will support me through luncheon at the Bishop's Palace.
Won't Rosemary be any support? Robert asked, overcome by his baser self.
I shouldn't think so. On Sundays, Rosemary is merely a daughter in her father's house.
Au revoir, Mrs. Sharp.
Don't let Robert drink all the sherry.